T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Big three at three, Clint, and I'm telling you, big news for season ticket holders for the Texans. The Texans reach out to season ticket holders on Monday to give them a trio of options for their tickets for this year. Fans can elect to keep their tickets with the hope of being able to attend games in person sometime this fall. However, because of the virus restrictions, they may not have access to their typical seating. That's one option. The second option, Clint, is to be able to skip this season of games with any money previously paid going towards their 2021 tickets. Instead, and my favorite part, additionally, those fans will also get a 10% credit on food, beverage, or merchandise at NRG Stadium. And finally, the third option is to ask for a full refund with the money being recredited to the account paid in form. So the Texans are stepping up, and they've given people three options to do things with. And anywhere from being able to still go to games this year potentially to getting your money back, which is awesome.
Yeah, I'm holding on to mine, so I mean, I'm still mad at my lady for getting rid of hers.
She got rid of them?
Yeah, not because she didn't want, she loved the Texans games. Truth be told, I think she just thought she'd be able to slide in with old Dirty Red. It just got to the point where she couldn't work schedule and things of that nature. She doesn't live right here in Houston like she did for several years, so it was a little bit of an ass whip to get down here every Sunday for her. So, but yeah, I'm still mad about that. I'm like, come on, man, we should have discussed that. Like she needed to run that by me or something, what she was doing. But nonetheless, I'd hang on to mine, man.
I mean, right?
You never know what's going to happen, but you got to believe that if there are limited seats available and you end up with those particular seats, you've got to believe that the value of those seats are going to go up, right? I mean, you got to believe that whatever you paid for them, if you don't want to use them, somebody will be willing to give you a good chunk to get in that game if the seats are limited.
I'm sure we have season ticket holders listening right now, and I wonder which route people are going. It would be very easy. It would be the second route to potentially skip this year's games, but put all that money towards 2021 because you still want to go to the games, and of course that 10% credit on food. Also helps as well, which I would be a big fan of. But I don't know if I'd be ready to go this year. But putting it all towards next year, having that, that would easily, to me, be the route that I would go.
Yeah, look, I mean, I understand that you wouldn't want to go, but I guarantee you'd like food to be able to sell them jokers for a nice little chunk if you...
You know, that's not a bad idea either.
Come on, man. Where's the hustler in you?
I stand corrected. That's almost like your neon rainbow. Yesterday, that was all.
Damn, you gonna bring that back up, man?
Yeah, everybody's been thinking about it in the back of their head. You're damn right.
I've been hit a few times. I wasn't thinking straight. I was talking fast. Come on, man.
That's right, man. How much could you sell those tickets for? I mean, if there was a limited amount, like if they had, 25, 50% of NRG field and people, you put that puppy on Craigslist or whatever, I wonder how much you could get for those tickets.
There ain't no doubt about it. Bridges generation, they're going to be trying to beat that door down, man. I ain't had no live sports for months on months on months, and get a little taste of the NBA, a little taste of Major League Baseball, and shoot, you get a chance to go over to NRG and watch a little football and with elbow room. Come on, man. They'll be lining. They'll be banging your door down to get them tickets.
You're right. Little Bridget probably would give us all her Christmas.
Oh,
money.
She's in there. Her neck's going to be sore tomorrow. Her neck's going to be sore. She's going, I can hear her through the glass.
That's right. Go ahead. Well, man, actually, that first option sounds the best. That sounds the best. Big 3-3, Clint Sterner in the show.
Big 3-3, number 2.
All right, Clint, ESPN, they did a story. They ranked the 12 most important games in the restart for the NBA, which starts on July 30th. And the Rockets of 12 of the games are a part of three of them. All right, and they're saying the Bucks-Rockets, which we know about, is one. The Lakers-Rockets is one. And the 76ers-Rockets are one. Do you feel like those are three really important games?
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt those are really important games. I mean, I think when you look at the star power, obviously, of those games is why TV's going to love them. But yeah. When I look at all three of those games, they've got the ability to throw bigs at the Rockets. And so how do the Rockets small ball approach? How do they handle the bigs that those teams can throw at them, the superstars that those teams can throw at them? Not to mention the 76ers are the one on that list that you go, huh? But they're a six seed. I mean, you look, they're a six seed right now. The Rockets are a six seed. I would believe that the 76ers are a team much like the Rockets. They would expect them to climb, to possibly climb, or the world would be shocked if they, or not, maybe not shocked, but the world would be like, what in the hell's going on if they were to fall to the eight or fall out of the playoffs? So, I think the 76ers are a team that are along those same lines as the Rockets with some high expectations, and they're positioned in a way that they could climb and make some noise and change up the matchups in the playoffs. So that makes sense.
I can't believe I'm going to admit this. Clint, you just changed my mind with your opening salvo there on that one. You got me. You changed my entire thought process, because I came into this thinking, of course, that Lakers and Bucks, those two are really important. And I depending on how those teams play them, and I think Giannis and LeBron, they will push their team and push their coaches to have them play pretty regular, because I think they want to get a flow. I don't think they're going to look at it as preseason games. I think they're going to get out there and play and try to at least give the fans and give people watching a really big game. So I thought those would be two big games for the confidence booster for the Rockets. I thought that 76ers game, there's no relevance. It's the last one. I think the Rockets will know what their seeding will be by the last game. But the point that you made about Hill, they arguably might have, I don't think it's a might, I think talent-wise, the Sixers have the best big man in the game. And to see right before the playoffs, to see how P.J. Tucker and the rest of the bigs handle a guy like Joel Embiid, who's playing for something, I think that does mean something. If they come out there and Joel Embiid gets 40 and 20, but if they come out and defend him well and show that they can do things, I think that is big. You didn't just change my damn mind in the middle of this.
Hey, don't be careful now. You don't. I've been known to do that. Now, hey, look, Joel Embiid, I tell you, I was talking about Jokic earlier about how he'll piss you off and kind of just lumbers up and down the court and gets kind of splotchy. I'm not sure if Joel Embiid, if he was lighter complected, that we wouldn't see some splotchy on him. He looks like he is so disinterested to run the floor. We went to the Army Navy game in Philly. They took us to a 76ers game, which is really cool. Wow. I love Allen Iverson back in the day, and I'd never been to a 76ers game, so it was a really cool experience for me. I just remember being so disappointed in Joel Embiid, in the sense of he's obviously talented. There's no doubt about that. But when you watch it, like his disinterest in playing the game when he's not within about 5 feet of the bucket is gross. It's disgusting. It's one of those like, damn, man, at least act like you want to run to the other end of the floor.
Oh, yeah.
Like you're interested in it.
Yeah, he can be disinterested. He's got some weirdness to his game, right? He's got a lot of Randy Moss Oakland Raider in him. The way he just looks like he's so talented but doesn't give a rip. But, boy, when he is interested, when Joel Embiid is feeling it and is ready to roll, there's not a better big man in the game. And if they get that Joel Embiid, that would be a really key thing.
That'd be a problem.
To watch, to see how they handle it. And I actually hope that the Rockets get that Joel Embiid in the last game of the regular season to really see how P.J. Tucker and Covington and company would handle him. That to me is that you woke me up to that one. That's strong. Big three. Go ahead.
Show just on that schedule as well. I think Brian Scalabrine, radio.com, NBA insider, just was on, and he mentioned the Portland game being the biggest game.
Yeah.
I think you can argue that the Pacers game with them sitting at a 5 seed, that's going to be a big game, just in a sense of it's going to mean something for the Rockets because they're trying to climb, so. There's several reasons to look at that schedule and go, man, there's a hand. And by the way, the two we didn't mention, Dallas and San Antonio, they're Texas teams. So every damn game is going to be important for one reason or another, at least in terms of the fan base.
Especially if Victor Oladipo is back, that Pacer game will be high intensity. Big 3 at 3.
Big 3 at 3. Number 3.
And this just out from NFL Network, Clint, it is sounding more and more likely that the preseason will be shortened, but nothing is finalized as the league and the NFL Players Association continue to discuss the issue, but it looks like there is a lean towards a shortened preseason in the NFL this year due to COVID-19.
Yeah, look, I think it's a great idea. I mean, I think this is one of those universal DH this season and see what happens. You know what I mean? Like one of those.
Yeah.
The NBA's been flirting with shortening the preseason, fewer games. And I know, obviously, the big hurdle is going to be the money that the owners can make and when they're not paying the players as much as they typically do in the season. I get that aspect of it. So that hurdle is going to be there, show. But from a what is it literally? What does it mean outside of the financial aspect of it? What does it mean for each organization? What does it mean for the players? What does it mean for the TV? What is the preseason games not being there or having fewer? What does it really look like? This is an opportunity for the NFL to take those swings and see what the result is, and they have every reason under the sun to do it right now, right? I mean, obviously. The NFL can hang their hat on, man, it's the safe thing to do. Give the World Health Organization, give all these docs, get whoever's making the decisions, give them another 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or a month to make decisions before they start traveling to cities and playing, in different arena or different stadiums every weekend. I think it's a, I don't know what they're going to end up doing, but I think it's an opportunity for the NFL to see what the hell the NFL looks like without. 4 or 5 preseason games.
It will be interesting. I remember we had John McClain on last week, who was with us each and every Friday in around 4 o'clock hour. He said he remembers when there used to be 6 preseason games. Could this be a segue? And I think you're getting toward it. Could this be a segue where they look at this and say, all right, college doesn't have preseason games. Maybe we can shorten these preseason games. And the only thing is the money thing, is how they would pull that off. But it would be interesting. If there is a league that would change for the better on things, the NFL generally is fearless when it comes to that.
Sure. Yeah, and I think it's something they've got to look at, Show. I think it's an elephant in the room. I know the owners and the money are going to be the big hurdle, but it's something they've got to look at, man.
Yeah,
Your players hate it. There's better, safer alternatives in terms of the joint practices, man, that these coaches, and I know as a player, I went to the joint practices last year with Sports Radio 610. We went to Green Bay and with the Texans and the Packers battling it out in a joint practice. And damn, it was good. You're talking about just a ton of really, really, really good work that just doesn't get done in preseason games. So now's the time if they're going to give it a shot.
All right, coming up, Clint, wait until you hear what two former Super Bowl champions had to say about a player that could be a real future problem for the Texans. We'll get into that coming up next. Yes, sir. Clint Sterner, Ron, the show, Hughley in with you till 6. And, Clint, I love when we hear former athletes and guys who have won Super Bowls and knows what it takes, and even Hall of Famers, when they speak on things, you tend to listen more. Even though, even with you, when I hear you talk about quarterback play and your experiences – And understanding you played in the league and played high level in college, I tend to take it in a little bit more.
Hell, you better.
That's right.
I bet it.
But we heard from two Super Bowl champions, guys who got stripes in the league, and they had two very, very, very different thought process on the Week 11 quarterback that the Texans will have to face. And I think it brings up a real interesting question. The interesting question that I want to get to. But first, I want you to listen to this. This is Booger McFarland, and this is his take on his belief on what Cam Newton will be coming in this season.
Have we seen him make unscripted moves? Have we seen him take hits? Let's not forget, it's a foot and a shoulder. And if you told me that Cam Newton is not going to run the football and not going to be that physically imposing specimen that we've seen, I would tell you I don't want it, because I don't see a guy that can become a dropback passer. And everybody's going to go back to 2018 with North Turner. Cam Newton completed 68% of his passes. Hey, stats lie sometimes. Those were a lot of check down passes. If you go back and you look at his completion percentage, 15 to 20 yards down the field, it was still in line with where he's been his entire career, which is a 50 to 55% passer. And that just doesn't cut it in an NFL where most quarterbacks are around 65, 68% completion percentage.
There's Booger McFarland taking in his inner Clint Sterner. Because I think Clint, I bet Clint's just sitting there like, yeah, hell yeah,
preach, brother.
Hell yeah, that's
so
it, that's
you know me, man. I just can't. I mean, I got into it, but went back and forth on Twitter last night talking about, well, just give me a reach. Why do you think Cam Newton is? Why is all of a sudden the Patriots one of the favorites in the AFC? Like, give me something. And that's whether I agree with Booger or not. There's a lot of times I disagree with him, but I happen to agree with this one. But the simple fact that he did the due diligence and the research is there, and it's one of those where if you expect him to do this, and that, or if he isn't able to do this, and that, then I'm out on him because of these reasons. And there's legitimate reasons to be concerned. To me, that is a very rare. A lot of people just want to go back to the MVP season instead of giving some real tangible things that we can ultimately dissect and decide if we want to agree or disagree. I love that right there.
Yeah, that was Booger. And now Hall of Famer quarterback, a guy who's been on this show a lot, Kurt Warner, he came out and said the following, that he believes Cam Newton could, with the injuries, the same type of deal that I had moving to Arizona, he could be what I was in Arizona in the second half of his career. And if you missed that, you know, Kurt Warner went to a Super Bowl and really had that one if it wasn't for Ben Roethlisberger and his Santonio Holmes.
What a catch, right?
Yeah, what a catch and throw. That throw, I don't even know how he just couldn't have put it anywhere perfect. But them winning that game took a second Super Bowl away from Kurt Warner. But he said he feels like he could be him in the second half of his career. And I think a lot of people listen to that and say, well, come on, Kurt. And I think a bit of it is because of the style that he plays. Like, we've seen a bunch of scenarios where guys that play in the drop back style of play, like Kurt Warner, can still improve and can still play at a high level later on in their years. Hell, we're looking at Tom Brady at 43 years old doing it. But I think a lot of people see the style of play that Cam plays and thinks, oh, man, I don't think he can have a second half of a career like that. And I think a lot of it is conditioned by what our thought process is and what we've seen in football so much. And I think a good thought to this is, how many think out there? You can text in and join in on this, Houston, 713-572-4610. Do you think Cam Newton can have a similar second half of his career the way that Kurt Warner did when he went to the Arizona Cardinals?
Yeah, look, sure. When I look at it, man, there's as I said yesterday, there's so many ifs that if I'm a betting man, I'm betting against it. But the simple fact that, is it possible for Cam Newton to, if he can stay healthy, to make another run deep into the playoffs, maybe even to a Super Bowl? Absolutely. I mean, the guy is one of the most freakish talents that the NFL's ever seen in terms of his ability to move around, his ability to run, take the ball the distance from anywhere on the field, his ability at 265, 6 foot five, to literally punish linebackers and safeties in this league. If he can do those things and stay healthy, and remember, it's a shoulder and a foot. That's different than a knee, right? A foot is something that, just the slightest of tweaks, especially when you're a quarterback, a lot of lateral movement, that just the slightest, at 265, the slightest of misstep could cause another injury. Shoulder-wise, whether it's throwing or running over somebody or going to the ground, man, those are risky injuries to come back from. And so if that can happen, show, hey, look, man, Cam Newton can put a product out there, and you know Bill Belichick's going to put a defense out there. If those things can happen and you believe those things are going to happen, then get ready and buckle up. It could be a fun ride.
Clint Sterner and the show with you. Do you think there is something to that? And we're wondering, do you think Cam Newton can have the second half of his career with the Patriots or whoever he plays with after this is just a one-year deal that Kurt Warner had in his second half of his career with the Cardinals? Do you think there's something to the point of we just don't have a ton of examples of a player like Cam Newton after 9-10 years moving on to be successful like that, that's where a lot of skepticism comes from? Because I think a lot of people are skeptical and think like, man, he's not going to be able to do that because of his style of play.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, the beating that his body's taken since his Auburn days, I mean, is different than everybody else's. I mean, it's different than anything that we've seen in the NFL from a quarterback perspective. People will talk about Vic and talk about Lamar Jackson. Those guys have a different level of twitch. Those guys have a different skill set. Both of those guys have – Vic for damn sure has a whip that I mean, Cam ain't never even – I mean, he can only dream of. And so Cam, while he is super dynamic and super athletic, he's not on that level from the ability to avoid hit. Now, he can absorb hits in a way that those guys can't because he's at that 6'4", 6'5", 260, yeah. 265. So he can absorb more of it, but there's still that big body that plays a physical brand of football. That's the best way for Cam Newton to win. And the question is, at 31 years old, coming off of those two surgeries, does he have the ability to still play that physical brand of football? And if he doesn't, show, then obviously the odds of him winning at a high level, they just plummet. You can't plug him into an offense and expect him to do pocket passer types of things over and over and over and over again. And that it has to be designed for him to go make those plays, and can he come? So, yeah, there's some skepticism. Hell, rightfully so. You've had two injuries, man. I mean, he's had two, like, big-time season-ending injuries.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there is one example, right? You brought up Mike Vick, and I'm not going to say that Cam is the athlete that Mike Vick is, but I will say this, the similarities of Mike Vick at 30 and 31 years old went to the best coach he ever had, with all due respect to Dan Reeves and whoever the hell else was coaching the Atlanta Falcons. Maybe it was Mike Smith. I don't know.
No, it was Moore, wasn't it? The young one?
Oh, God. Is it Jim Jr.? Yeah, the hell.
Is that who it was?
I would have admitted Jim Moore Jr. God, you're right. It was Jim Moore Jr., with all due respect to him running that UCLA program into the ground. But Jim Moore Jr. and Dan Reeves, when Mike got to Andy Reid, his best coach he ever had, you could argue he had two of his better seasons, especially his first year when he got a lot of the starts. He was himself. He was himself at 30, 31 years old and still able to get things done. I'm not saying Cam is that, but I do think there is still, and all this is we talked about if he's healthy, I still believe that at 31, Cam can be himself. It could be himself in a way and still produce the way he has before in a way that Mike Vick did, because he's getting to the best coach he's ever had, all due respect to Ron Rivera and North Turner, but this is the best coach that he's had. I think it may be even arguably the most creative group that he's had. And I think there is still room out there for it.
Yeah, I think there's room out there. But going back, you know, again, going back to the point of what we made yesterday, if they've got to sign somebody else. Cam Newton makes the existing group better because they can commit to the run. They can commit to some of the quarterback run stuff.
They don't have to be perfect.
They don't have to be perfect. But you're still going to be in the NFL. You're still going to be in third and sixes. You're still going to get into situations where you've got to move the ball. You've got to make big time throws. And this is difficult. This isn't Cam Newton. This is everybody. You're going to need big-time throws, and most of the time the quarterbacks get the credit show, but ultimately, if you've got a receiver that's creating space and creating separation from some of the best corners in the league, if you have that guy, then the quarterback's job is significantly easier. Cam needs that guy in the pass game. He needs – we all do. All quarterbacks do, and they simply do not have that guy. The teams will roll the dice. They'll load the box. They'll pressure Cam. They'll run blitz Cam, and then they'll roll the dice to say, we're going to bet that Edelman can't get the separation that he needs in order to make the catch, which he can't. He's not a separator from a top DB or top two DBs on a team. He's a slot guy. N'Keal Harry's not going to separate and make throws in the oceans, create throws in the oceans for Cam Newton. So teams are going to force it and put it on his arm. And the Patriots just do not have – that one X factor. If they get that,
that's right.
Show.
And then week six, when Antonio Brown is there, week six.
you think Belichick goes back a second dip?
There's no other team that makes more sense for AB when you just think about the need for him.
You're right.
I can't see those two together. I can't have Cam and him together. Right. There's something about those two.
It would be must-see TV. You talk about two. Are there two more polarizing athletes in the league or in the world? Hell, those two right there. They're people you either love them or you hate them. Now, AB's made it hard on the love category, but I mean, you either love them or hate them. They either stir you. They stir you one way or another. There's no sitting. There's no straddling the fence.
Yeah, craziness of AB and Cam's moodiness. That's not a great combination, I don't think. These are to me the two secrets. To the Houston Rockets' chances of really, really moving on and having a deep playoff run like many experts think they have. We'll get into that coming up next. That's right, man. The sexiest team in all of Houston, Clint Sterner, and the show here with you. Just want to throw y'all off just a little bit. Here with you till 6 o'clock. And Clint,
I like the sound of that, Chief.
Yeah, baby. That's a T-shirt right there, the sexiest crew. And all of Houston radio right there. I think these are two potential secrets for the Rockets. I am a believer in the thought of, man, have your best guys do the things that they do best. Right? We've talked about this with the Texans ad nauseum. We've talked about this man consistently making Deshaun do the things that he does best and pushing that. And I think the two real critical guys that many folks aren't talking about are Covington and Jeff Green. Covington, 6'7", 210. Jeff Green, 6'8", 235. Clint, I think the ability of those two guys to be able to play the five more consistently to allow P.J. Tucker to slide over to play fours and threes, to me, could be the real key of the playoff run. Because unlike Tyson Chandler, those guys continue to allow you to play the game you want to play it. They can stretch the defense. They can still shoot threes. You want to have all five guys on the floor that can shoot from the perimeter. They can handle the ball. They're longer than P.J. Tucker. And they should give you a chance to rebound better if they're on the floor also with them. I think those two guys could be the potential secret to their success. If they can go on and play the five and allow P.J. Tucker to slide over and do what he does best. The best thing that he does is he is a bulldog defender. He is a great – a lot of teams, you know it, Clint, when you watch basketball, sometimes it gets down to a guy has the ball, a wing player, and he is ISO'd, and he is taking a guy one-on-one. And the best guy who does that for the Rockets defensively is P.J. Tucker. And I think those two guys are pivotal to allowing P.J. Tucker to be in a position to do what he does best.
Yeah, you know, I definitely think they're pivotal. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I think that one reason that our guy Isaiah Hartenstein is gone is because Jeff Green is caught. He's up to speed, right? He's up to speed. And there's no need for Hartenstein any longer. So, I think they're definitely pivotal. I don't know if – because here's the deal with Covington. Covington is one of the better off-the-ball defenders. And so this is a question, right, is with his length and being off the ball and being able to switch up top and his ability to get his hands on passes and get his hands on balls, get tips and things of that nature, does moving him where he's defending across the baseline back and forth, does that take away from his ability to do what he does best on the defensive end of the floor? I'm asking that question. I don't know, because they switch so much. I'm going to assume that it really doesn't matter. He's going to get his opportunities. But if he is guarding a five, I got to think the five can camp out in the corner, and that takes Covington's length out of the middle and out of the passing lane. So I wonder how much that affects the point you're making.
Yeah, he can camp out in the outside, or he could be in the post. And you're right. He is a solid and above average on the ball defender. But he's not P.J. Tucker. I think P.J. Tucker is the – like, Clint, if there was a perimeter guy getting hot, if Kawhi just started going off, or Paul George just start going off, or Mitchell just start going off, or LeBron just started going off, the one player that I think Mike D'Antoni would want to put on them, the player that has that dog – the player that has that bite, the player that is best in terms of using his chest and his footwork and on the ball, when it comes down to that, it would be P.J. Tucker. And to me, if you take P.J. Tucker and put him in the post, or put him where he's hanging out and he's guarding Zubek, he's their best defensive player.
So you're just talking about spot play. I mean, at some point in time, when the moment's big and you got to have a stop, the ability to pull P.J. Tucker off and put him on LeBron or put him on whoever's dominating the ball for the opponent, you got to have the ability to do that. Is that where
yes.
You're at? Or
yes, but I think it's pivotal that you have P.J. Tucker in the best stamina or best feeling in the fourth quarter when that happens. All right, just imagine if Dwight Howard's leaning on him the entire game, and then in the fourth quarter – when LeBron is feeling himself, you're like, all right, now we're going to switch P.J. Tucker, who's played 30 minutes with a 260, 270 guy over him the whole time. Now we need you to come and be our guy to stop LeBron.
Right, right.
Go ahead
and make it four in game four, game five. You know, you've already done it for three or four games, and now you're, in a seven-game series. Yeah, no, I get it, man. I mean, that's a – So the point being is that Covington or Green are guys that they're in a seven-game series, you would expect to spell P.J. Tucker and allow him to play the four or allow him to – really what you're saying, Show, to me, is that the Rockets need to find a way to keep P.J. Tucker healthy and fresh and avoid the fatigue aspect in a seven-game series. Because when it comes cutting time, he's going to be the one in game six when you need it the most that you're going to have chest to chest with LeBron.
That's who you would want, or Kawhi. Or, like, right. To me, like, people may disagree, and I'm seeing some on the text line who think that Covington is the better perimeter defender. To me, P.J. Tucker is your best defensive player and your best – is the guy, if somebody is going off, that's the guy who I would want to put him on. That is who I would – before Covington, before Ben McLemore, he is the dude. He is the person. And if you can't do it because we're playing small and he's got to play Zubix or he's got to play JaVale McGee instead of being out there like, man, we got to get somebody – because you know Kawhi will physical your ass down there to get to his spot.
Yeah,
it's a little tougher to do that to P.J. Tucker.
The guys you're talking about, there's no doubt about it, P.J. Tucker's got the linebacker stature, the build, the you know what I mean, the broad shoulders, the extra few LBs, the extra physicality to his game. I mean, he's the guy that's going to make it more difficult on those guys. I mean, Covington, to me, everything I've read about Covington show, Covington is better off the ball. He's a great defender off the ball around the perimeter. One-on-one, he struggles a little bit. So, and not that I need to defend you versus a text line. Hell, that's an all-day job. But there's no doubt about it that according to everything that I've read about the Rockets, Covington is the guy you want off the ball defending. He is hell on passing lanes and gets his hands on loose balls a lot. So, it makes sense. They got to figure out how to keep P.J. Tucker healthy. They got to fight the fatigue of P.J. Tucker, and every opponent that comes into this into a series versus the Rockets, their mentality is going to be, we got to lean on P.J. Tucker and get him tired, because if this thing goes six or seven games, that's going to be advantage the opponent. There's no way around that. P.J.'s going to struggle in game seven if it goes that long.
Like, I know many people around here. There's some San Antonio Spurs fans around here who, it'd be like when Bruce Bowen, who was their best perimeter defender, if all game long you said, all right, man, all right, go guard Shaq or Paul Gasol, all right, for the first three quarters, and now we need you in the fourth, and now we got to put you on Kobe, and now we need you to go shut down Kobe. No, no. Now you're taking away what the best thing that Bruce Bowen does, and then at the end of the game trying to splice him on their best player offensively while he's already worn down and worn out. As I said, to start putting your players in the best position to do what they do best, and P.J. Tucker is their best defender. And it seems to me one of the real casualties to the small ball approach is you're taking that from him. And that to me is, I mean, it may be what the casualty and the compromise has to be. It is just something that could be problematic.
Well, either way it goes, Show. I mean, there's three different ways to approach, you know, the Rockets and what they could potentially struggle with. And I think every damn one of them involved P.J. Tucker. I mean, ultimately, yeah. And that's no disrespect. I think that's just the reality of it is that the most important player in the series, once they get to the playoffs, in damn near every series, regardless of how you slice it, is going to be P.J. Tucker. You know what you're going to get on both ends of the floor from both guards. Harden and Westbrook, you're going to get what you've received their entire career. That's what you're going to see. Can P.J. Tucker stand up to some of these big dogs in a seven-game series? And as you mentioned, can he, in a blink of an eye, adjust and switch and man up the best players in this league in key moments? That's ultimately what the Rockets are up against. If they can address those situations with P.J. Tucker, then, Chief, the Rockets, the likelihood of them winning goes through the roof.
And will they have another person on the roster that they would trust that they could move P.J. Tucker off of playing the five that they want to bring back in?
Depends on who that five is, right?
Yes. Depending on who that five is. And is there a trust where they say, okay, we can bring in Jeff Green and allow him to start to be on Kawhi in the fourth? And I don't know if he has that trust in that player just yet. Clint Sterner and the show with you here until 6. And Clint, man, today is an anniversary. Today is a sports anniversary. I'm telling you, this is one that I think ranks up to one of those sports moments where many people know where they were. Many people knew where they were and will remember this forever. Here's a little audio to remind you of that historic moment.
What happened here?
He got bit, I think.
Evander Holyfield, look out! He's pushed right here, above us, by Tyson.
He's got bit in the ear.
Oh, my goodness, he's got a bloody right ear. Holyfield bit by a dirty Mike Tyson.
That's right, a damn dirty Mike Tyson. It's the anniversary of when Mike Tyson lost his damn mind, quit in the fight. And his way of quitting was not throwing in the towel, but his way of quitting was biting Evander Holyfield.
Chief, Mike Tyson's one of my favorite of all time. I'd wait in line to shake his hand. I mean, that's he's in that category for me.
Really?
Chief. Yes, absolutely. Mike Tyson is in that category for me. But in the same breath, I can say he's disappointed me as much as any. It's hard for me to get disappointed by somebody that's an athlete that I don't know. And he's disappointed me multiple times throughout his career. I mean, I love Mike Tyson. Loved what when he bit Evander Holyfield's ear, I was so disappointed. I mean, I just expected so much more from my guy Mike Tyson.
Could you imagine if you had money on that? Could you imagine if you had money on Tyson and
he bit the damn guy's ear?
He just quit.
Hey, speaking of. You know, I mean, these memes going around on social media. One that was that I had to giggle at when this COVID-19 mask thing hit. Did you see the one with Evander wearing a mask and it wouldn't clip on?
It wouldn't clip on.
It wouldn't clip on.
Only had one
Mike
side.
Tyson.
Yeah.
I know Evander. Holyfield. I know you. I know you're a Houston guy, man. But it just, man, that was funny.
Like I don't like, dude. I don't know. Is Evander is a hell of a man to forgive that. I'm sorry, man. Like, dude, they say don't ever spit in a man's face. That's right there. Don't ever just bite my ear. We are in an athletic competition, and you and I've done nothing to you but just work your ass over. And your maneuver is to hell with it. I'm gonna bite you. That's how I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna spit my mouthpiece out, and my reaction is I'm gonna bite you. Like I don't know if I could ever forgive that one. I there's no more shaking hands. We're not doing documentaries together. I'm sorry, man. You bit my ear off.
Well, it's something tells me that these guys that beat the hell out of each other for a living, that they'd be a little more acceptable of somebody biting their ear than you and me.
Really?
I mean, I would think so. Yeah. I mean, I mean that UFC stuff is about as barbaric as it comes. Would it really surprise you if one of them cats decided to bite somebody's ear or somebody's finger? Or hell, the way they get wrapped up, somebody's toe.
That would be a game changer. I don't care. Like, isn't there across the line stuff? Isn't there some stuff in football that is across the line that, you know, that, like, man, I know we play a barbaric sport, but, man, you know.
Yeah. They're definitely across the line, Chief. Yeah, they definitely cross the line. I'm like, just telling you, some people they're a little more forgiving than you and I would be.
And here's the thing for me, Bridget, that annoys me with Clint. Clint has been talking about for the last 2 days. Oh, I just can't get out of my mind. The last time I saw Cam Newton, he had that bad performance against the Buccaneers, or he was throwing balls into the dirt and couldn't complete passes, and it's hard for me to not look at that. This is one of the last times we've seen Mike Tyson, but Clint is convinced that Mike Tyson could beat Tyson Fury. What about the last couple of times we've seen Mike Tyson? How come it doesn't work?
Let's be honest. Heavyweight boxing right now, and Tyson Fury isn't quite the NFL. I mean, they need Mike Tyson. The NFL doesn't need Cam Newton, you jerk.
Come on, man. The last time you saw Mike Tyson, he was getting the hell beat out of him. I think Lennox Lewis, what was the last Tyson fight? Whatever it was,
It was painful, though, man. It hurt my heart, man.
It was hard. He's biting people and just getting worked over. But no.
You're right. Mike's back. Mike, Cam's done. Mike's back. Mark it.
But you believe.
I do. When I seen that video, I said, Mike, please put Mike in the ring with Tyson Fury. Please do.
And I know you watched those Cam videos. I know you were impressed by some of those Cam videos.
Bro, there's never been a video of Cam I watched and I wasn't impressed. That dude's a freak, man. I mean, it don't even make sense what that cat's capable of doing physically. It makes zero sense.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, that what a moment. That was just the craziest thing. I remember where I was. I was younger, but I was in a house full of people who had put money on Mike Tyson, and they were hot, turned on. I mean, turned on Mike Tyson right then and there. Turned on him. Because, I mean, you just, that is the ultimate. Like, he quit, right, Clint? He quit, right? That counts as quitting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, yeah, okay. There's no doubt. Now, I don't know that he didn't quit out of like he just went off the deep end. You know what I mean? Like you and I quit. Like we just throw in the towel and be like, I don't want to get hit no more. I'm done. I'm you're better than me today. I'm gonna go back to work and figure this thing out. I'm not sure that was what was going through Mike Tyson's head. I think it was more along the lines of like, to hell with it. I'm just fixing to bite him knee. I'm gonna do everything I can to get out of here. Yeah, no, I think he just flipped his lid more than gave up. Yeah,
but that was crazy ass Mike Tyson's form of quitting. It's biting Evander Holyfield. My goodness alive. All right, coming up, you can get your football fix at 4 o'clock. Clint Sterner's football at 4 coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.